Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unk, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unk podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unk, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
We talked about Anthony Van Dyke this week.
Yeah.
Who, as I mentioned at the end of the episode, I probably drove my friends crazy because I have a really beautiful book of a lot of his pieces, and I would just take a picture on my phone and send it to them and be like, can you believe? Because they're so good. I mean, I'm just, my mind boggles at his skill. I am really fascinated by the sort of cagey information we have about his family situation.
Yeah.
Because I really do think when you put all the pieces together, particularly the revelation that he had a secret daughter that his sister was raising, then him going so hard to fight his brothers-in-law over the family fortune starts to make a lot of sense. I mean, he may have just done it for the benefit of his siblings, but also when you think about, like, oh, one of those siblings was raising his kid,
right,
then it's like, ah, now I see.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fascinating to me, all of that. I mean, I think he was... this is a guess. This is my speculation. I think he was purposely kind of cagey about his travels and whatnot for that very reason. No one ever knew about this kid, apparently, until his will. So,
yeah.
Cagey, sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
I have a note in my notes that says the timeline of European art, Caravaggio.
You're like, what did I mean when I wrote that down?
I don't 100% know what I mean. Their lives overlapped.
Yeah.
But I don't, I wrote this outline long enough ago. Like, we've been kind of juggling some recording stuff because of our schedules and some problems with, you know, just technical issues. And I don't remember what that note was about. It was so crystal clear to me then, but there you go.
Yeah.
I do remember is my note about historical portraits because...
Okay.
Every once in a while, there is a trend in our modern lives where, like, a portrait studio will pop up or an existing studio will do an offer for a little while where they do old-timey photography. We're like, you can go get your picture taken and it looks like you're in the Wild West or
sure,
you are in Victorian London or whatever. And now, of course, you know, with Photoshop and
like filters, Instagram filters.
Yeah. And like, I don't even want to get into the AI situation. You can do that all the time. But his historical portraits kind of made me think of that. Like people were like, no, I want it to be me, but I want to look like Venus. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting idea. I love it.
So many things in this episode reminds me of our episode on Micheline Wattier.
Yeah.
who they were contemporaries, but stuff like a lack of agreement about how to say her name because it sort of depends on whether you were being more French or more Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And the part about working as a professional artist while not being a member of the guild.
Yeah.
I think that was something that I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, her brother had been working as a professional painter without being in the guild. And then, of course, just the overlap of when and where.
Yeah.
When and where they lived.
Yeah, I wish we had more info on his inner life.
Yeah.
Because other than, like, his notes about, you know, finding pieces of art really beautiful or whatever, we don't have, to the best of my knowledge, any kind of, like, journals or discussions that are from his point of view of his thoughts. And I feel like he had to have been such an interesting character to be around. I also think, like, he might be a history crush. He's so handsome in those later self-portraits. Yeah. I just think he's cute as pie. And he was apparently, you know, right up until the point where he got married.
Right.
In his 40s, like a womanizer. So clearly, yeah, like, he had charm and appeal and charisma. The idea, pretty recently introduced, that we have completely misunderstood his relationship with Rubens is also fascinating to me, right? Like, we,
mm-hmm,
you and I see this all the time. I think anybody who does any kind of, like, history research regularly does, where, like, there is a version of a story that gets written, or a version of a biography or whatever that gets written sometimes pretty close to when the actual events happened.
Uh-huh.
And the default, because there aren't necessarily other sources, is to take that as the truth.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's, that's something that I find really interesting in the field of history in general and just doing the show, like how the history that is written about a subject evolves over time. And that's normal.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes folks who maybe, I mean, I'm not judging anybody's knowledge, like, but folks who, you know, do not have a sense of, like, what the field of history does, will learn that there is a biography that has sort of a new interpretation of how something worked. And we'll imagine that there's something, like, wrong with that, when really, like, that's how the whole field of history works. It's a whole, right, process of evaluating and interpreting the sources that we have about something. And sometimes there are new sources that are discovered. But other times it is more that, you know, the next historian to really take a thorough look at something is looking at it from a different perspective, with different, you know, parts of their own education and worldview and all of that, and,
yeah,
can interpret something a bit differently than before.
Yeah, this is why I really like that Christopher White biography that we mentioned a couple times in the episode. It's fairly recent, right? It's 2021, I believe. And he's really the first one to point out, like, there isn't really any evidence of some kind of dramatic fight between the two of them.
Right.
But it makes, I mean, if you want to apply Occam's razor, see how I did that? Looped around, yeah, to another old podcast subject. It makes more logical sense that, like, they just weren't in the same place at the same time. They weren't having the same life trajectory since, you know, Rubens had this other career and a family that needed his time and attention.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just makes, and he was clearly, like, passing commissions off to Van Dyck.
Right, right.
So whether or not you buy the idea that, like, oh, the portraits, because those were not as well regarded as real art, he's still making sure the guy's getting a living. You know what I mean?
Right. It does. Well, and that, like, that was something that was really interesting to me. There have always been forms of art or literature or whatever that were viewed as the real deal, while others were viewed as, like, commercial or not worthy of scholarly attention. And, like the literature department that I studied in college, I loved so many things about. It was snobby in terms of, like, what was considered okay to study and what was serious literature and what was not. So I find this whole idea of like the portraiture was thought of as commercial and not art really interesting. And it also just makes me curious about how, like, if this really was something that was playing into his mind at all, like, how did he feel about it? Was he like, I'm making plenty of money. Like, what's your goal with your art? Is it to be able to support yourself?
Yeah.
Or is it to you know, make great art? Or is it both? Like, what is it? And I don't know. That just, I kept getting distracted by those thoughts while we were talking about that part of his work.
Yeah. And I mean, he was painting other things, but he really became so known for his portraits. And I almost think, right, that is a unique opportunity, right? At a time when art, for lack of a better phrase, was glutted with people doing religious imagery, historical imagery, etc., he elevated portraiture in a way that made everybody excited about portraits.
Right.
So, like, he kind of took that opportunity, whether he intended to or not, of, like, the lesser regarded part of the art world and made it something that, you know, really transcended all of the others. It makes it so interesting. It really, to me, seems like I wish, this is another use of our imaginary time machine, I would love to go to England and see the unveiling of, like, his or Rubens's very naturalistic portraits in a world where mannerism had been, like, it for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is such a gear shift of, like, those very stiff, slightly surreal-looking portraits of people that, like, you know, almost vibe to me the way, like, the characters on a deck of playing cards look, right? Like, they're very stiff and not quite natural. And they're often very beautiful, but they don't feel like real life. Whereas then you have these portraits that often look like photographs. And, like, how was that being perceived? Obviously, a lot of people in England were excited about it, but I'm sure there were people that were like, what is this? That's what people look like. I see that all the time. I don't want it in a painting. I don't know. I'm sure there were detractors of that nature, but I love it all. I love it all. I could really look at his stuff all the time. And now I've got it in my head that I need to do, like, a Van Dyke Museum crawl and just plan a maybe multiple trips to go places where they have some of his best things. But
I think that sounds great.
But that sunflower portrait you can only see in a book.
Yeah.
Unless it gets loaned out one day, which I don't think happens very often, but I don't know. I haven't tracked it. Anyway.
Right.
Anyway, Anthony Van Dyke, you sneaky little minx, your secret families and your unclear impetus for doing various things.
Right.
I don't even care. Just keep showing me the paintings. I'm good.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We talked about mammograms this week.
We sure did.
One thing I did want to say before we start is that the most recent email that we got asking for an episode on mammograms, the person who wrote in expressed feeling very afraid about the idea of eventually needing to get a mammogram because of all the horror stories shared. And so I just want to take a minute and I want to acknowledge first, I am not having to deal with medical racism or fat phobia or transphobia or like, I'm a white woman in a major metropolitan area who has insurance. So I recognize that I'm starting like having the easiest access to getting a mammogram. But I have been getting mammograms since I think 2013, which is I think earlier than at this point anyone would recommend doing so. I think I was 38 because my mom has had a breast cancer. I would say it's not a comfortable experience. There is squeezing of the breasts.
Yes.
Every single person who has ever conducted a mammogram for me, which at this point has been at three different medical centers, in Atlanta and in like the Boston area, every single person has been compassionate and efficient. And in terms of like having to go back this time, very reassuring. It is clear that everybody knows that like getting a mammogram is not the funnest thing. And everybody has just tried to get me in and out as efficiently and with the least discomfort possible.
Yes.
I would rather have 25 mammograms than one set of dental x-rays.
Oh, yeah.
Because dental x-rays make me gag and I find it embarrassing. And also would rather have a whole bunch of paps than dental x-rays. I feel like people hear the horror stories, and I just, of all the things that I could go through in a medical context, I am more stressed out about driving to the mammogram than I am the mammogram itself. This most recent time, we have one car in our household, and we accidentally double-booked the car. Patrick was going to be out of town with the car. And if you live in the Boston area, you know the T has been incredibly broken lately. And I did not trust a rideshare service to get me there on time either. So I literally stayed in a hotel near the medical center the night before so that I would not have to deal with that stress in the morning, which again, I know having money to spend on a random hotel night is a privilege, but it made it so much easier.
Yeah. I will say too, and I wonder if this is your experience, because I have been getting mammograms for around the same amount of time you have. I am a large busted woman, but I will say in that decade, a little over, because I just had one very recently, I feel like it has gotten less and less uncomfortable as imaging technology has gotten more and more fine-tuned. Like it
For
used to
sure.
be the flattening and extruding aspect of it used to be way more painful than it is now.
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's not comfortable. I don't want to hang out there. But like, I wasn't like, oh, I just have to gut it out through this. I was like, okay.
I think the first mammogram that I ever got was a digital mammogram, but it was not the 3D mammogram that they offer where I am now. Which I do feel like there's less compression involved in that than there was the first time I got one, which again, I think was in something like 2013. And I'm usually in and out of there in
minutes, like,
yeah,
longer sitting in the waiting room than like actually back there. When I had to go back up for a follow up, there was more compression involved than just for a screening mammogram, because they got to get a closer look at it. And then I also had an ultrasound, and everything was fine. But like that I think the like the going back, the diagnostic mammogram was, I would say, more uncomfortable, but still like not anything that I would describe to anybody as like the worst thing. I know everybody's body's different.
Right. Oh, 100%.
But I also feel like if you have heard about mammograms from folks that were getting them in the 80s or 90s, probably way more uncomfortable than now.
I feel like some of this, in the weirdest way, come along on this journey with me, relates to kind of the stuff we were talking about when we were talking about Anthony Van Dyke, that there's one version of the story of his relationship with Rubens that has impacted the way we have perceived that relationship forever.
Sure.
Similarly, in the 80s, there was a huge, I don't know if huge is the right word, there were significant high-profile women comedians talking about mammograms. And I feel like that seeded, because of course you're always kind of like prone to exaggeration to get the laugh, to
the comedic
like make
effect,
the punchline as strong as you can. And I feel like that has seeded this sense of terror in people that have never experienced them, because then it becomes funny to talk about them that way. And that becomes kind of culturally the norm.
Yeah.
And so there are people that are coming up and reaching the age where they're getting close to having to do it. And all they've ever heard from like relatives and whatnot, and part of that is also like getting over the still existing stigma of talking about like completely normal medical stuff you got to do to take care of your body,
right,
has been a joke about the horror of it. And I remember there was one comedian that used to talk about like smashing your boob between two books, and like that being like the image people have in their heads or what they've heard their, you know, older friends or relatives talk about. Mm-hmm. Of course that's terrifying. And again, it's not, I don't want to stand there and drink a Diet Coke and chat, but like,
right,
it's not that bad at this point. At least it hasn't been for me. I am sure for some people it probably is still more painful, certainly, than what I experienced, but
right. I also, you know, I try to do the recommendation of like trying to schedule them between periods when my breasts are less likely to be tender, but that's becoming more challenging.
Yes.
Because that's more random. And also since the like the height of the COVID pandemic, especially getting the appointment scheduled, everything's been farther out.
Yeah.
Like the medical system is still struggling from the pandemic. I think it was not my mammogram that I had to reschedule. I had to reschedule my physical, and because I had COVID.
Right. and like, see you in 7 months.
Yeah. Well, it was like 2 months was how far out my physical was bumped. But anyway, I wanted to have that. If you have never had one and you've only heard horror stories, I understand feeling really scared about it. I do not feel them. I do not personally find them to be a horror story worthy experience.
No. And I will say, to add on to your mention of how compassionate and kind and really, you know, as gentle as possible, most of the people working in those in breast care imaging centers can be, a lot of them too really try to make it almost like spa like, where like,
oh yeah,
you get a heated gown when you go to do your thing, and like they're playing gentle soft music and it's very chill.
I got one at a women's hospital in Atlanta that was 100% like a day spa with a heated robe, and I still miss it because that is not what I'm doing in Boston.
Yes.
What I'm doing in Boston is like, I mean, it's fine. But it's a very no frills. It's like there's your locker you can put your stuff in. Here is a plastic bag containing like a clean cotton robe that you, and it just wasn't as much of a nice, it's not as much of a nice experience as the time that there was a heated bathrobe on me.
Yeah. Some of them definitely do the spa-spital experience, which is nice.
Yeah.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Here was the question that I had.
Sure.
So we mentioned, we quoted a statistic about the high incidence where a patient or someone in their life has been how they found their breast cancer.
Yeah.
But I am really curious about the parameters of reporting, because is that a case
where...
Well,
that's a great question.
Is that a case where they're like, hey, my husband mentioned something felt weird here, so I scheduled a mammogram. Like,
right. Well, and that's... Yes. Yeah. This particular study that came from, in as I remember it, was something where it was like patient self-reports. Like the question was asked, how was your breast cancer very first detected? With that first detection being what we're talking about. And for a lot of people, they were either intentionally examining their own breasts.
Right.
Or it was by accident. Like you're trying to carry something and you're like, that feels weird. Or their partner finding it. And that was the majority of how people first. So it was like, yes, they did detect something and then went to the doctor and got like a physical exam at the doctor or a mammogram or whatever. The point was that like that I physically felt the thing with my hand or my partner's hand was the first sign for a lot of people, not the going for the routine screening mammogram.
Right. Now, my other question though is, was there a comparable of people who self-reported things that turned out to not be?
I don't think so in the study that I was reading.
Do you know what I mean? Because I know there have definitely been times when I'm like, I don't know, everything feels kind of lumpy at the moment. Like,
sure.
And it's been like, nope, clean as a whistle. Like,
yeah.
So I wonder if there's that as well to be factored in. Like sometimes people are just going to be like, huh, that's not quite right. And sometimes, unfortunately, it test positive or it's, you know, imaging reveals a mass, and but other times probably it doesn't.
Yeah. I am pretty sure my mom's breast cancer was detected on a mammogram.
Yeah.
One of the people my age I know who just who went through a breast cancer diagnosis was actually getting what he thought was going to be his last mammogram before a gender affirming surgery. And the mammogram found calcifications that were a sign of cancer. And everything's fine.
Good.
With my mom, everything's fine. Like, at this point with my mom, that's been, I might even be 20 years ago. Like, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And so it's like, anecdotally, I feel like I know several people personally whose breast cancer was first detected on a mammogram. And that it's a hard thing, I think, to track, because that it's not, I mean, there are increasing electronic medical records and things like that that might make it more possible. But, like, that's not something that's necessarily specifically written down in a way that's going to be something that you can just correlate across a broad number, range of people.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, how often are people, like, something doesn't feel right, I should schedule a mammogram, but they don't ever tell their doctor or the radiologist that.
Yeah, yeah. I just generally found the framing of the question of, are mammograms a cost-effective way to detect early breast cancer? Like, I found that a really frustrating thing. I feel like there are legitimate questions about some of the growths that are caught really, really early. There are questions of, like, did that actually needed to be that actually need to be treated?
Right.
Same question that's been around since the 70s. Or, you know, was that a tumor that just would have been there, causing right. no actual harm for the patient's whole life?
Right.
And again, having not really realized that it was within my lifetime that we very first started having routine screening mammograms as a thing, it doesn't surprise me that there are still so many pieces of it that there are still questions about. And it is so personal to people that the idea that, like, maybe you would not start until 50, people are like, but what if I developed cancer between 40 and 50? Like, I totally get that. And I remember when recommendations were changed about when and how often to get Paps, because getting a Pap used to be an annual thing.
Yeah.
And now there's a whole... it's almost like an equation based on, like, your age, whether you are sexually active or monogamous, and whether you've had negative HPV tests. So, like, all factors into how often you should get a Pap test. And when these, like, new standards were first put out, I remember women in my family being so angry because they were like, they want us to not have this every year and people are going to die. And some of the examples that they had pointed out, I was like, okay, that this, you know, long ago family member that you're talking about did not have cervical cancer.
Right.
Had a different cancer that would not have been detected through a Pap at all. But I get it. I get how it can feel like, but now they're just going to miss it. And it's like, well,
yeah.
There's a question of, did we actually need to do that though?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the... I'm very, like, pro get all your screenings, particularly, you know, as I have gotten older, none of it's fun. You're not like, wee, I would like to be poked and prodded. But, I don't know, there's a little bit of peace of mind that comes from knowing that you're getting things looked at, and hopefully
right.
people can develop good relationships with their doctors. I know that's not the easiest thing in the world,
yeah.
but it's just, you know, I want to keep everybody around as long as possible. So if you can do an early detection on something, I'm very much a proponent of it. Again, I know it stinks, but I kind of several years, like probably 6 or 7 years ago, I just like made my ongoing one of my annual resolutions is like, get it all the tests my doctor says I need.
Yeah.
And then during the height of the pandemic, when nobody was going anywhere if they didn't have to, like there were several years where nobody was getting stuff screened.
Right.
So then I had to have, we had our little discussion here at our house of like, you know, we have to go get a million things screened.
We gotta even do it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We do.
So yeah, I remember at one point reading headlines about like the whole debate about whether people should be screened between 40 and 50. And I did then go talk to my doctor, say, what should you recommend here? And the recommendation is that I continue to do it annually.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been, doing.
Medical stuff. So fun.
Super fun. Anyway, so yeah, again, not medical advice beyond try to find a provider that you trust, which I understand. I mean, we've been focusing on the United States and the fact that we don't have universal health care. But I know it can be difficult for people to find primary care doctors in places that do have universal health care because of shortages of doctors and things like that. So I like just situations everywhere. But yeah, happy Friday, whatever's happening on your weekend. Hope it's good. We'll be back with a Saturday classic tomorrow and something brand new on Monday. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.